The Cambie Report was produced and recorded on the traditional and unceded lands of the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and Kwikwetlem peoples.
Blank. Okay.
Have you heard of the millennial pause?
No.
It's the awkward second or so before, if you watch a TikTok video or something, you can tell someone's a millennial because they don't start talking instantly because we don't trust technology.
Fascinating.
Yeah. We're old now, Matthew.
I know we're old. But that means we vote. It's August 26, 2022, and there are 50 days left until the Vancouver municipal elections. This is the Cambie Report. I'm Matthew Naylor.
I'm Ian Bushfield.
Your resident geriatric.
Just a bunch of old millennials here.
Yeah.
Lots on the show today. We have polls. We have more evolving situations in downtown East Side. We have trees. We have shady money. And we have obscene, obnoxious, absurd promises in Surrey. We need to get into it. But first, we need to beg for money.
Yes. Please. Support citizen journalism in Vancouver and its environs by going to patreon.com/CambieReport.
Yes, patreon.com/CambieReport will throw you in our Slack channel and you can enjoy all of the nerdy political conversations before we get to it on the podcast.
Yes, patreon.com/CambieReport.
So let's talk numbers. We have a poll finally. We haven't had many polls in this election, but we finally have some numbers that come to us from Team for a Livable Vancouver. Now, the poll itself was done by Forum, a reputable pollster who was up there with the others. I don't know that they've done many in Vancouver in the past. And this poll involved 358 people and was conducted in late July. And I guess they sat on it for 3 weeks for some reason.
Yeah. So that this poll has issues, but let's get down to the numbers and then we'll get to the issues next. This was a, like, effectively a ranked choice poll. They asked for first choice for mayor, second choice for mayor, and then some push polling questions, which we will get into in a second. So, first choice for mayor. What are we at?
Good news for Ken Sim. He got 19%. Kennedy Stewart sitting at 16% and Colleen Hardwick at 15%. Given the sample size,
that's rounding out the pack.
A nice
rounding out the pack, 8% for John Cooper, who is now out, 6% for other, and 3% for Mark Marison.
We have some second choice votes as well. There, Hardwick and Sim are neck and neck at 29%, and Stewart is sitting with 20%, who would pick him second.
Followed by Cooper at 15%, 10% for other, and 8% for Mark Marison.
It's worth noting this poll was done before John Cooper quit, so we don't know where those votes would go, or if maybe they'll just sit with the NPA. Whoever they pick will have to, I don't know, do another poll when they officially announce who their mayor will be, if they ever get around to it.
Yeah, or release a poll in some kind of timely matter at all. It should be noted that this poll was comprised of a select group of people. Those 358 odd responses were comprised of an age breakdown of 47 people under 35, 49 people aged 35 to 45, 113 people aged 46 to 64, and 127 people over 65, which means that basically millennials and Zoomers are pretty underrepresented in this poll, and there doesn't appear to be any weighting. I'm betting that this was done as a landline poll because
I think it was, yeah, instant voice response, IVR.
Yeah. That sounds about right. It's difficult to get younger people on the telephone, and so this can skew poll results.
The argument in defense would be statistically and historically, younger people have voted less, but you run that risk that that voting turnout can change based on a popular candidate with the youths, like Justin Trudeau in 2015, although I don't see anyone here energizing anyone.
No, but as we reminded people off the top of the show, we are no longer youths. Millennials are sending their kids to school and paying property taxes now, and very little motivates turnout at the poll so much as pocketbook and, of course, how well your children could be doing at their education.
So team took this poll pretty positively. They tried to spin the strong number that they are in the lead when you add first and second choice votes, the idea being they have the most to grow. It's a bit of a stretch. I think they can be proud that they're clearly in the running. I think this is what people had the sense of. It's still early days.
Yes, we have been saying that all along. Like, we have been, to put it bluntly, sounding the alarm that Colleen Hardwick is a legitimate candidate for some time. And while team is not in first place in any demographic except for women, according to their poll, the breakdown shows that they are like second place or in some cases third place in every demographic.
Yeah, it's not a stellar poll for them, although it's a good place to be given they started a bit later than everyone else. It's not a great poll for Kennedy Stewart. He would, I presume, want a clear lead, and he doesn't have that here. And it's not even a great poll for Ken Sim because he's still neck and he wants probably a two-way race with Kennedy Stewart. Not a good poll for Mark Marison, who's in last. Not a good poll for the NPA.
No, and like in particular for Ken Sim, I think it's notable that this poll was taken before Ken Sim's very poorly received promise to hire 100 nurses and 100 police officers. That particular promise, I think, we called it totally disqualifying. I don't see a ton of popular support for it. They've got some other wacky promises coming down that we'll cover later in the episode. But rounding out this poll, they included some what I will call push-pulling questions of the sort that remind me of the "have you stopped beating your wife" type of questions.
When we look at their press release, they talk about this at this first question we'll talk about. It's, we found that 56% opposed the recently voted on Broadway plan. And that is what the answer to this question was. But the full question, which they were kind enough to share the tables with me when I asked, so thank you, Bill Thielman, for that. The full question was, Vancouver City Council recently voted to support the Broadway plan to allow up to 3 high-rise towers of 20 to 40 stories in each block of a 500 area from Clark Drive to Vine Street and from 1st Ave to 16th Ave. Would you say you agree or disagree with this decision? Now, nothing about that is incorrect, but the Broadway plan was a very large document that also had to focus on housing needs, and that's what drives the focus on high-rises, and the high-rises aren't the only thing in that plan. So taken as a whole, I think it's hard to say that this is fully characterizing it.
Yeah, you could easily phrase this question as, Vancouver City Council recently voted to allow developments that would improve housing supply along the Broadway corridor, Canada's densest transportation corridor, and the area in Vancouver in most need of housing. Do you support or oppose this decision?
Or, Vancouver has identified that it needs space for 90,000 more people and has recently approved a plan to make that happen. Do you support that? You know, how you phrase a question really matters.
Yeah. So, their fourth question is, are you concerned or unconcerned about the amount of influence that major corporate developers and others with significant financial interests in Vancouver decisions have in city council decisions? You know what? I'd answer yes to this question.
You, along with 83% of Vancouverites who answered this poll, the other 79% work for them. Finally, and this was my favorite because they framed it as 43% support electing Colleen Hardwick as the first woman mayor. But the question itself says one of the mayoral candidates in the October election is Colleen Hardwick, who, if elected, would be the first woman in the city's history. How important is it to you for a woman to be elected as Vancouver mayor? Like, the latter part, I think, is an interesting question to ask, and it's a worthwhile discussion that we only have one woman candidate in the city has never had a woman as mayor. Framing this as they support her specifically because she's a woman, again, twists it a little bit.
We've also only ever had one non-Scottish mayor, so it's a bit of a red herring of a question. Like, how important is it for us to stop electing Scots? I'm in favor of a woman getting elected as Vancouver mayor I am not in favor of this woman getting elected as Vancouver mayor.
You don't want to elect the person who wondered if earthquake risks are being overblown in Vancouver?
No, nor the person who said of Indigenous consultation, I don't even know how to do that.
So overall, an interesting poll. I'm glad to see it. You know, you do have to note that when a poll comes out from a political party, they aren't under an obligation to release that. So they clearly only release it when they think it's good for them. We don't know what other numbers are out there. Other parties have clearly done polling. Maybe none of them have gotten good answers for themselves. So you got to take all that with a grain of salt.
Yeah. And polling is expensive and unreliable. And it may be like money better spent to just get out there and do voter engagement, especially in a situation where you don't see like strong correlations between like the broad population and what they would do if they were forced to vote on election day and what might manifest because turnout is low and so therefore wonky.
Yeah, turnout's 40%. So there's a good chance these 358 people don't even vote, in which case this poll is utterly meaningless.
Yeah, sound and fury signifying nothing.
Let's go to the downtown east side now for an update on how things are doing along Hastings. The first part of the story started on Monday, where reports came out mostly via Twitter and by people on the street that the VPD had assaulted a man who later died in their custody. The full story has come out over the week. As much as we can know, Chris Amyoit, a member of the Rolling River Ojibwa First Nation in Manitoba, someone who's lives in Winnipeg. He was visiting family in Vancouver. He's a father of seven and grandfather to one. He was hit by bear spray at one point. I'm not clear on who hit him with bear spray. I think that was accidental, but it seriously traumatized him and he was in pain. So he was seeking help and support. He ran into a grocery store and poured milk on himself and he was still distraught. Police were called and arrived. They say there was just an interaction and a beanbag gun was discharged at him. Witnesses say he was hit twice in the chest and four times in the back in quick succession. He went into distress and lost consciousness and died while in custody. And now the Independent Investigations Office is investigating whether the police actions killed him.
Yeah, this is an incredibly sad story. And it's highlights how the old aphorism that 1,000 deaths is a statistic and one death is a tragedy. This is a tragedy, but everything along Hastings is an absolutely tragic series of events. This brings us into what happened on Wednesday, which was a press conference from the mayor and fire chief. Apparently, 40 people have agreed to move indoors as shelter spaces open. There are not enough shelter spaces for all the people who are living there. BC Housing is looking to add another 700 spaces in the coming weeks and months. The city says that the VPD was not a part of the official process, but is patrolling the area. And the Vancouver Area Network of Drug Users calls for a greater focus on enforcing bylaws against SRO owners. This is coming across as a time when, even as some parts of the encampment are being dismantled and taken away, several tons of material being thrown away, other pieces of the encampment are being erected at the very same time.
Yeah, the call from Van Du is quite important, as CBC has a report out with data from Vancouver Fire Rescue Service that shows in 2022, when they have done investigations and fire inspections of SROs, around 40% of those investigations, and we're talking several hundred, have churned up fire violations. And this has been consistently above 30% since 2017. So somewhere between 1 in 3 and 2 in 5 of those SRO buildings has fire hazards in it at any given time. They're death traps, frankly. And so Van Du is saying, look, these buildings are in violation of clear rules and bylaws. If the city could focus on fixing them and holding the owners to account so that they are safe, there wouldn't be people living on the street at the levels we are seeing.
Yeah, and this sort of goes to speak to the general neglect and issues with homelessness, addiction, mental health, and marginalization that we see in the downtown east side, as well as other places across the region. This leads us into talking about a Freedom of Information request to the Coroner Service for the postal codes of the 619 heat dome deaths that occurred last year. And it is remarkable in noting that the downtown east side saw relatively few deaths during the heat dome.
Yeah, this is a CTV report. Andy Yan helped them crunch the data. It's a really interesting piece of journalism as they looked across the region, Metro Vancouver, and found generally the deaths occurred in the more densely populated area versus the lesser areas. Downtown Chilliwack, downtown Abbotsford, downtown Maple Ridge, all the way into the core, except in Vancouver. It was still in some of the areas with less tree cover, but it seems like the downtown east side was able to come together and protect. That doesn't mean no one died, but it was fewer than many would have expected. Dr. Jatinder Baidwan, who they quoted in this piece, says, that tells us something about when people come together as a group and they've got their own social infrastructure set up. They can protect themselves and warn themselves about what's happening in a trusted way, and they can respond better. And it ties into the importance of checking on your neighbors. And one of the things that was highlighted post heat dome, or even just in the lead up to it, was we need to check in on one another and have those communities and neighborhoods and villages where we know our neighbors and are able to look after them. And that's something that is a core part of the community in the downtown east side in many ways.
So the Hastings encampment and the Crab Park encampment are emergent communities. They are people spontaneously organizing themselves in the way that most best serves them. It's important to recognize that and not try to disrupt and dismantle that in a way that doesn't provide people with another community structure with which they can protect themselves. I think it's particularly notable that a lot of the deaths in Vancouver occurred along the Kingsway Corridor. In fact, there is this bright red line across the map of Vancouver that goes right down Kingsway. And Kingsway is an area where a lot of social displacement has happened because of the rezonings of a lot of the areas for six-story timber frame buildings. There are a lot of people squatting in those areas because those buildings have been shut down and are ready to be torn down in order for redevelopment, but they still have people living in them as squats, and they are in danger. It's an absolutely tragic thing to see.
And one of the key suggestions for policymakers that's come out, among other things, is urban tree cover and these kind of areas of cities that get too hot when there's not enough vegetation. And this has led A Better City to Vancouver to highlight their latest bold platform with the nice round number of planting 100,000 trees in Vancouver within, I missed the timeline, I think 4 years, but possibly a little bit longer. The city had previously done 150,000 trees under the Greenest City Action Plan between 2011 and 2020. So this isn't an impossible number of trees. Although at some point we run out of space to plant trees in the city, but there's definitely a lot more places to put trees up. Do you want more trees?
Yes, I do. I actually live in an area with 0% tree cover and is the worst heat island in the entire city.
So yeah.
So 100,000 more trees. That's a particular distinction that my apartment has, and I would love some more tree cover. In other news, Views of Vancouver has been identified, and the backer is none other than Peter Wall.
Yes, this comes to us from Dan Fumanu, writing in the Vancouver Sun. He interviewed Peter Wall, who said, Views of Vancouver is us. I started it. He basically just felt he needed an outlet to talk about the issues that are important to him, like the closure of West Point Grey Road, which just happens to be the road he lives on.
Yeah, it's fascinating how Peter Wall gets involved in local politics. You may remember him from the last election as the person who is behind the pro-Hector Bremner general advertising campaign that led to the new advertising rules that we have in this election.
That was until Peter Wall decided that he liked Kennedy Stewart because Stewart would stop the tankers in the inlet.
Yeah.
Peter Wall has no principles. He just likes to pick random. Or, like, he talks about in this how he was supporting John Cooper and was at the NPA campaign launch for John Cooper. But now that John Cooper's out, he says the board is working against Cooper and he doesn't support the current leadership. So he's just like anti-Kennedy Stewart and current council right now. He has no like skin in the game. He strikes me as the kind of billionaire.
Anti-Kennedy Stewart and current council right now is also the position that I hold.
Peter Walsh strikes me as the kind of rich person who knows he should be involved in politics, but doesn't know how or what he's trying to accomplish with it. So he just floats around throwing money at whatever is his fancy that day.
Yes. In particular, he has spent $21,000 on ads since last year.
Just through this Facebook campaign. Who knows what else he's involved in. But
yeah. In other completely unhinged news, Doug McCallum is back in the news, pledging that within 4 years, Surrey will be the number one city in Canada, and has also promised to build a 60,000-seat sports stadium and SkyTrain to Newton. This would be the largest stadium in Canada, supplanting the Commonwealth Stadium in Edmonton, which holds 56,000 people. BC Place currently is the third largest and holds 54,500 people. Rogers Arena, on the other hand, holds 18,910 people.
Everything about Doug McCallum's campaign launch this week was wild. The claim of being the number one city in Canada just really takes me back to my undergrad at the University of Alberta when President Indira Samarasekera of that school said we would be a top 20 by 2020 university. It was never clear.
What's she talking about? Altitude?
Exactly. Yeah. We never knew what metric she was going by because that was intentionally vague. In some metrics, the U of A dropped in ranking over that intervening period. Maybe Surrey will be the number one city of places with mayors named Doug McCallum.
Yeah. Doug McCallum also said that in a interview with CBC that within 3 or 4 years, Surrey was going to surpass Vancouver in population, despite absolutely no modeling to suggest this. He continued by saying, "The city is a very big city. We'll be bigger than Vancouver in 4 or 5 years. We need a sports stadium, so we're going to build a sports stadium in the next few years." This claim was not backed by any population estimates.
Continuing to lie and contradict established facts, he claimed the Vaisakhi Parade, in the last one that was held in person in 2019, had 700,000 people. Organizers only ever claimed it had 500,000, which is still a massive event. The Vaisakhi Parade in Surrey is huge. You don't need to lie about how huge it is, though. Maybe he just forgot, though.
Yeah, that's giving him the benefit of the doubt, and I think he has exhausted the benefit of my doubt.
In talking about the stadium, he says he's had talks with the BC Lions and Vancouver Canucks. It's not clear exactly what he said. In some ways, he's implied he's talked to them about moving to Surrey. In other ways, it just seems like he's talked about how many of their fans come from Surrey. But he's seeming to suggest that the Lions and Canucks would relocate from downtown Vancouver to an indeterminate location in Surrey. Like, he hasn't even said where this giant stadium would go, other than near a SkyTrain. And there would be a big park there, too.
Yes, but not a parkade. He's saying that there would be zero parking associated with the stadium.
Every single person would take transit, which I love that energy.
Yeah, I'm big on that particular part of this totally bananas promise. But also, we have Stadium Chinatown Station. Like, a huge proportion of the people who already go to our stadia are taking transit.
Yeah.
I know this in particular because I was watching all the people coming out of the weekend concert after being nearly baked to death in BC Place, and they dispersed themselves onto the train.
It's also wild to talk about having the major football and hockey teams in the same arena, as far as I know, there's no combined hockey football stadium in Canada because those are different demands of a space.
Yeah, there isn't one anywhere in North America or the world.
Every other mayoral candidate who was asked about this campaign promise said it was bananas in a different way, shape, or form, because it is. Ginny Sims in particular, possibly channeling current or former, I'm not clear if he's still there, campaign manager Stephen Carter said, "Who is supposed to play there? The BC Lions? The Whitecaps? This is not a case study for Field of Dreams. Doug McCallum is no Kevin Costner in Iowa."
No. Speaking of campaign managers, Brenda Locke appears to have lost hers.
Yeah, Jazz Joe Hall tweeted out a rumor he's heard that her campaign manager for her Surrey mayoral campaign has, he's asking who else has heard this rumor. Justin McElroy says, raised his hand in reply. No one's confirmed it as far as I know, so we're still just sharing the speculation, but people were speculating this clear from Twitter. Brenda Locke replied, it is always best to check sources. Former campaign manager is working two other large campaigns. Current campaign manager is a longtime friend. This team was built with John and continues to be a supporter. It seems like the campaign manager is gone to work other campaigns.
Yeah.
And that's a spin Locke has put in there.
Yeah, that seems like Brenda Locke lost her campaign manager to me. It really, Doug McCallum, for all his many faults, is very good at controlling the media and getting his name in the papers. We just spent 10 minutes talking about him and how bananas his particular promise is. But, like, we haven't covered a single other, like, substantive promise by any of the other Surrey candidates for mayor. Simply the fact that they are running makes the news, but they aren't contributing to the narrative.
Maybe some of them should promise canals throughout Surrey.
Oh, my God.
Throwback.
The Wandering Canal, for context, is a promise by Doug McCallum to build a canal of sorts from the Fraser River to somewhere that would wander through Surrey and provide waterfront space and recreational aquatic access to the citizens of that city. It is a promise that has gone absolutely nowhere, but has been apparently, by City of Surrey staff, characterized as possible.
Let's move out to Harrison Hot Springs, a municipality I don't think we've ever covered on this podcast, but is still part of the, it's part of the Lower Mainland. It's not beyond hope, but their housing plans seemingly are beyond hope, as the Fraser Valley Current has a great article in their newsletter on the housing needs assessment that they conducted a couple years ago. This comes to us via Grace Kennedy, who works for them. What basically happened is every municipality, as we've talked about before, had to do a housing needs assessment at some point to figure out how much housing they needed. Harrison did theirs in 2019, and they figured 45 more affordable units, mostly one beds. That's about it. No more additional housing would be necessary for Harrison. Some of their population would move, some would die, and that would free up enough for everyone who wants to go live in the resort community / growing village.
Yes. This is, of course, coming against a backdrop of the population that has grown 30% or 437 people in the last 5 years. This is the largest percentage growth that any municipality has seen in the Fraser Valley.
Despite these challenges, the council is currently looking at revising their official community plan. It's had its first couple readings. The rest seems like it'll be punted till the next council. They haven't changed anything in it, really. They figure everything's moving fine. Maybe a couple more apartments will go up against the water, although they've recently rejected one suggestion. There should be
council
some...
Council in particular has rejected two developments that seem to fit that OCP, including that 6-story apartment near the water and an 18-unit townhouse. Basically, these promises are the same as the 2007 OCP and suggest that council encourage affordable rental and special needs housing as part of new developments, despite not actually doing anything to encourage affordable rental and special needs housing.
So if you were ever hoping to have a vacation property in Harrison or to move out there and work remotely from the quiet and cute community, get some money.
Get bent, I think.
Find $1 million, because their housing has gone up from an average price of like $350,000 to over $800,000 in just a few years. So the people who live there are very happy.
Yeah. Speaking of money and people, segueing awkwardly back into Vancouver politics, Alvin Singh has been announced as the latest Forward Vancouver candidate, running with Kennedy Stewart. Alvin is the communications manager for Kennedy Stewart and is going to be running for council with them. He has secured the coveted last VDLC nomination and is, along with Dulcie Anderson, the other Forward candidate to be nominated or endorsed by the VDLC.
Yeah, this is interesting. It was always rumored that Forward was going to be announcing more. I don't know if they're going to stop at what do they have now? Five or continue to?
I think it's four now.
They may bring more out. They've got two VDLC nominations. There's a lot of other progressive candidates. Unless they have some polling that says Forward Together candidates are going to do much better than everyone else, the only reason to put more names on the ballot is to get that extra spending limit at this point. But you risk the challenge. But you run the risk of getting splitting the vote.
Yeah, there's a law of diminishing returns at some.
It's not the only new candidate to be announced this week. I saw just yesterday Mark Marison announced Progress Vancouver has another council candidate, David Chin, who was an actor and local educator and has worked abroad. Thin release on who this person is. I have not heard of him before, but good luck, David Chin and Alvin Singh.
So basically, the team of people who are now running with Progress Vancouver includes not only Mr. Chin, but also Asha Hayer, May He, Noel Rosa, Morgan Auger.
And the ex-MPA candidate.
And the ex-MPA candidate, yes. So it's a large group of people that Progress is running, possibly taking a bit of a different political strategy than Forward and hoping to capitalize on that spending boost.
Finally, following up on our talk last week about NPA speculation, there's a little bit more solid rumor that it's going to be Fred Harding being named, but I've also seen people say he's already been dumped by them. So they've pushed back the naming of their new mayoral candidate till August 30th. So I guess we'll find out on Tuesday who, if anyone, is running with that sinking ship.
Yeah. There isn't really much to be said about this particular story other than that the NPA apparently still exists and will be nominating a mayoral candidate. As such, we are now at the end of our episode, and that brings us to every episode's end, a Vancouverada. And we thought, in honor of Doug McCallum's totally unhinged promise to build a stadium to Surrey, we'd give you some context and talk about the construction of Rogers Arena. So, Rogers Arena was completed in 1995 and cost $160 million and was completely privately financed. It replaced the aging Pacific Coliseum as the main venue of events in Vancouver and was supposed to serve as the home arena for not only the Vancouver Canucks, but also the Vancouver Grizzlies. It was actually essential for the GM Place to have both the Canucks and the Grizzlies to make that business case. It wasn't an if you build it, they will come situation. It was very much a they are here, let's build the stadium. They also happened to be the home to the Vancouver Ravens, briefly, of the National Lacrosse League. This was primarily built by the Griffiths family and the former owner of the Vancouver Grizzlies, and it was opened in 1995. It changed its name in 2010. As GM declined to renew their naming rights. Finally, in July 2012, the Aquilini Investment Group announced that they were planning to build a tower with condo units onto the stadium, but they switched to rental units, providing the city with much-needed rental space, including the rental space that I currently live in. The city, however, lost about $35 million in developer contributions to community facilities in the Northeast Falls Creek area that would have been collected if the unit had been condos. This is, of course, reported by Francis Beulah. The two towers were completed in 2016 and 2017.
Yeah, it's now a very central part of the downtown Vancouver Entertainment District. A lot of concerts happen at Rogers Arena. It's held a number of UFC and WWE championship fights. The Juno Awards have been held there in 1998, 2009, 2018. And it even hosted the 2018 Dota 2 Esports Championships.
You can't top that.
It's a big thing for some people. I won't knock it.
It is. No, it's true. It was also, of course, home to the 2010 Winter Olympics Ice Hockey Games. And also, Queen Elizabeth II dropped the ceremonial first puck in an NHL exhibition game between the San Jose Sharks.
Should it be the Royal Rogers Arena then?
It absolutely should. Yeah. That That would be amazing. Rogers Arena is obviously a stadium that has a little more of a business case than that which is going down in Surrey. I look forward to hearing Doug McCallum's next promise, because I'm sure it will provide us with excellent fodder for this podcast and entertainment for you lovely listeners. Thank you all for joining us for this latest edition of the Canby Report. We've only got 50 days left until the Vancouver municipal elections, and then this will all be wrapped up. I am always grateful to have everyone with us. For Leg and Boot Media, I'm Matthew Naylor.
And I'm Ian Bushfield.
Good afternoon.